This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:35. Today marks a major change in the way state government does business, but it's a change you likely won't even notice. West Virginia is rolling out its third phase of OASIS. That stands for Our Advanced Solutions with Integrated Systems. It's software that integrates a majority of the business state government conducts. But as Ashton Mara reports, it's not necessarily that simple.
So to understand how OASIS came into being, you have to go back 5 years. In 2009, the state legislature passed a bill creating an enterprise resource planning board to work to define and procure a new enterprise resource planning system. To put it simply, members of the executive branch realized the way the state was doing business was out of date and becoming more and more expensive to maintain. So instead of pumping more money into old software programs, they went to the legislature and said, "Hey, if you give us some money, we'll research and take bids and find a new system that can simplify business and put all of our transactions in one place." And that's exactly what lawmakers did.
The question really was, would we go towards a consolidated system that standardizes a number of functions or continue having these standalone systems?
Charlie Lawrenson is Governor Tomlin's chief of staff.
Definitely in business and in other realms with lots of varied employment and lots of varied activities, enterprises have gone to these new interoperable systems.
At the time, he was serving as Secretary of Revenue under Governor Manchin and participated in the process of establishing OASIS. Since the bill's passage, though, a lot has happened. The planning board, made up of the governor, auditor, and treasurer, narrowed the requirements down for the new software to about 12,000 points. They put it out for a bid, took responses, had staffers from all agencies sit through months of presentations from bidders, and after a year, picked a vendor. For about $98 million, West Virginia decided a Montreal-based firm, CGI, could provide everything they wanted. Today, the state is rolling out phase three of the OASIS system, the phase project director Todd Childers calls the heaviest piece to date. Delineated by letters instead of numbers, phase A rolled out in August of 2013 and evolved the system to put together the state's annual budget. Phase B was specifically designed for the Department of Transportation and their operating procedures. But it's phase C that will affect the largest number of people so far, some 3,400 state employees. This phase handles what Childers calls the back office business operations of state government, things like accounts payable and receivable, purchasing and investments.
No state has ever undertaken this full breadth of functionality in one project. Some will, most usually you'll do financials by themselves. We contracted to have all of it done all at one time.
And they've contracted to do it with the same company responsible for the creation and implementation of healthcare.gov, President Obama's site meant to allow all Americans to shop for health insurance. But as we all know, that didn't exactly roll out as planned. So how do we know it's going to work today, when all of a sudden, all of the accounting transactions for an entire state change form?
That's a completely fair question, and we need to be able to deal with it.
Again, Lawrenson.
First and foremost, this company, the bread and butter of what they've done is put together these types of systems, enterprise resource platforms and programs together for a number of states. They've had governmental projects, you know, at this scale throughout this nation before, so they have a track record.
Programs like healthcare.gov, Lawrenson says, are not what the company really does. CGI has put together similar multi-platform operating systems for Massachusetts and Alaska, New York City, and LA County. Lawrenson says the previous two phases have been successful, and this one has gone through rigorous testing along the way.
And, you know, given the fact that this was such a significant financial commitment and sort of insider baseball, the governor has charged his cabinet and his senior staff and others to make sure this rollout has every chance of success. And we're optimistic.
For those 3,400 employees tasked with overseeing the new business procedures, Lawrenson says it will likely be a frustrating transition at times. Childers says without the change, the state would have incurred tremendous cost to keep up with their, quote, dinosaur of a system. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:40. Partly sunny skies today, some scattered rain and thunderstorms. These storms could produce some gusty winds and heavy rainfall. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s today. Strong storms continue overnight with lows in the 60s. And again, partly sunny on Wednesday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 80s, mostly sunny by Thursday.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Public Theater, presenting Dames at Sea, July 9th through the 13th at the Metropolitan Theater in Morgantown. Details at wvtheater.org.
The Appalachian region has been reported on, documented, and studied quite a bit in the past 50 years since President Lyndon Johnson came to the region to declare a war on poverty. But two friends, one lives in Johnson City, Tennessee, and the other in Dickinson County, Virginia, are hoping to make a documentary showing what's good about the area. Cecilia Mason has more.
The Appalachian Project, or TAP, was started earlier this year by Shane Simmons of Johnson City and Jason Barton of Dickinson County. Barton says they are collecting stories from people who live in a specific part of Appalachia.
We're really focused in on, the Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, and North Carolina areas, and for a couple of reasons. We have to narrow down our search area. It's just so big. There's so many great stories, great people out there. And also, that's the areas that we're familiar with. That's the areas that we've traveled to, that we've lived in.
The Appalachian Project is looking for articulate older people willing to share interesting stories that highlight the region's heritage and culture. Simmons and Barton mention coal miners, nurses, loggers, and soldiers as good candidates.
Anybody that, has that interesting backstory that can shed some light on how Appalachia used to be, and, in a positive light.
It's important to Barton and Simmons to collect stories that are positive, and they think that's something Appalachians crave.
We're not some city slickers coming in trying to, make an Appalachian documentary that's been done so many times and, cause people to worry, because when we first started this project up, we got a lot of emails instantly, saying, please, can you focus on the positive things of Appalachia and not the negative things? Because we've heard and seen and so many things, that's projected negatively in the mountains. And, we, of course, would never do that. That's the opposite of our goals.
Do you think people are weary of that picture of Appalachia?
I think so. And it's kind of funny. Just this morning I read, I think it was the New York Times, had an article about Kentucky, and it was painting a very unflattering, and the three things everybody seems to want to talk about is drug addiction, poverty, and lack of education, which there are problems everywhere, and you don't want to minimize that. That's certainly an issue that has to be addressed, but, what we're just trying to do and is to paint the positive picture. A lot of people ask us what that means, and it's just telling the full story. There's so much beauty here. There's so many good people, so much quality around us that story never gets told. It seems like the people that want to talk about Appalachia are people who either were born here and moved away and they kind of look back and feel sorry for folks, and or somebody who doesn't really understand the culture, and they don't really realize that most people are here because we want to be here. We love the mountains, we love the privacy, we love the beauty, we love the community and family, and we value that more than we do, having some of the modern conveniences. And, I like to go out and eat at nice restaurants just as much as anybody else, but I also like to get home and know my neighbors and really make that connection that you can't get sometimes when you're in a larger area. So that's really important to show that side, that aspect of the Appalachian people and culture, which I think it doesn't get told a lot.
Barton and Simmons are not documentary filmmakers, not even close. One is a banker, the other sells insurance. They were called to document Appalachia during a road trip last year to New Orleans. They took a break in Chattanooga and met a really interesting older man who seemed like he had a good story to tell. Simmons says another goal is preserving the culture.
Being Appalachian is somewhat of a culture, and it seems like we're losing a little bit of that identity. And it's good and it's bad. You know, social media and the world is and America is becoming more homogenous just because, you know, we all watch the same shows and we all connect that way, and you can make friends and, you know, other countries online and that type of thing. But we want to keep – the reason we're focusing on the older generation is to keep that – some of those traditions alive and preserve that. And a lot of times a good story, even if you pass it down, it doesn't have the same effect as seeing someone tell it.
Simmons and Barton are finding people to interview through social networking. They've created a Facebook page, a sort of virtual meeting place where folks from the region can share stories, historical facts, photos, thoughts, and ideas. It's also a great way to find potential interviewees for the documentary. And based on the response, Appalachians are anxious to have their story told.
The response has been overwhelming. I think it, for a lot of people, and I'm not just saying this, but you know, we get the emails that say, you know, this, your Facebook page alone, you know, has made me so much more aware of my heritage, has made me so much more proud of where I come from. And that's things that, you know, we're making a difference in the world already with what we're doing. So the interest in it has just grown huge with ourselves and our followers.
People are looking for something to believe in, and I think that that's what we're trying to give them is we do believe in Appalachia. We believe in the people. We believe in where we're from, and we're hoping that that translates, and I think that's what people are seeing, and that's why we're getting so much support from so many different areas, and that's really what keeps us most excited.
Simmons and Barton hope to continue collecting videotape stories until the end of the year. They then plan to use these stories in the documentary. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Cecilia Mason. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.